Good evening, everyone. Welcome. Nice to see you. We have a rule, Lefum Sar Agra. According to the effort is the reward, and Pesach is probably the holiday that we put the most effort into. And so we're guaranteed that when we put effort into things, Hashem pays us back. We find it in going out of Mitzrayim a few things, that Hashem could have just said, okay, you're free, go, and that would have been it. But it was a long process where we got the Egyptians that punished us were punished, and we got to develop a relationship with Hashem. And therefore the process was a slow one. There was a process of makos and where we got to leave and we got to see that justice was done. But we see from the fact that Hashem, the way He dealt with us, He wanted us to leave, that not only were we able to leave, but we're able to leave and see that the Egyptians that had punished us, they were punished. And we also got to see that we left with great wealth. And we also got to see the hand of Hashem. We were going into a new life, and we weren't sure that we'd be taken care of. And Hashem took us out in a very special way. And because He put such great effort into helping us become a people and allowing us to experience that freedom, so too, we put a lot of effort into Pesach itself. And we're guaranteed that the effort we put in, sometimes we put a lot of effort, and it's frustrating effort that we put in for things that, you know, cleaning and running around and doing all kinds of things, but we're guaranteed that Hashem will pay us back. So we'll just start with that as far as the job. And the other thing is that we know that we have to balance things. One of the things that we try to do is that we try to list things that are a certain minimum requirement. In other words, there are certain minimums that you can do, especially if you don't have time or a person just is worn out and they just can't get to everything. And then there are certain things that a person has more time and more effort, the way they would like to do it, or the way their mother used to do it, or the way their neighbor does it. But we try to say at least what a minimum is or what the halachic requirements are. And certainly if a person does more than that, or if certainly at home they do more than that, we're not discouraging a person from going farther. But it's just a person kind of just has to know what the minimum is, and then they can build everything from there. What I want to do is I want to cover a lot of things, and then we'll have a chance for questions. So I'm going to go a little bit quickly, but I'm going to try to follow the basic outline of the newsletter. I want to just cover the basic kashering the kitchen, getting the kitchen ready, and basically Pesach products and things. So the newsletter, the first thing we started with, there's just a little bit of a history to it. A lot of the books that are out there were very strict, the ideal thing would be if we could investigate every single thing we put in our mouth for Pesach and we knew exactly what went into it. And sometimes we can. And there are books, this is the famous Rabbi Blumenkranz Ovah Shalom has the famous medication guideline. But they discovered that some people were not taking their medications because they figured, oh, I'll stop taking it for 8 days, what will it hurt me? And unfortunately, we're commanded to take care of ourselves. And so there was a backlash that the rabbis decided that it was important to kind of tell people you don't have to go to such big extremes necessarily, and it's important to take your medicine. So in the last few years, there's been a more of a lenient view that's been out there that a person can follow. And the lenient view is quoted here, that basically any non-chewable pill is acceptable for Pesach. Vitamins and supplements that perhaps you could go 8 days without, or perhaps you could check into if you really need it, if it's not doctor prescribed, or something chewable, that definitely needs to be checked into. And that's mentioned over here. Also, over-the-counter medications. A person has a slight headache, they have allergies. So those, it's not something that a person will really be sick if they don't. There, a person should ideally check the guidelines in the books and make sure those medicines are acceptable for Pesach. Now, you are allowed to take, there are certain products that we'll get to in a minute called kitnias. The Torah commands us not to eat any chametz, which is the five grains, wheat, rice, felt, oats, and barley. And there are a number of things that Jews from the European countries have become accustomed not to use. Those items are called kitnius. That's on the right side over here. And kitnius, or the gums, they were forbidden for several reasons. Some of them because they made bread out of them, like cornbread and other kinds of, they were similar to grains. And some of them, the way they were marketed on the farms, they were carried in the same, the farmers would bring them in the same baskets and they'd be stored in the same bins. And you remember the old general store where you went to, and they, many times it was relatively common to find grain mixed in with these items. So even though these items themselves are seeds and they're relatively harmless, it became a custom not to use them. Even those, for example, the Svardim that use rice, they check the rice very carefully because occasionally they do find grains mixed in. But our custom is not to use the rice, but that was the reason given for many of these things, and there's a list of them on the right side of the kitnius. Now, medication, we only have to avoid chametz, anything of the five grains, but we don't have to avoid kitnius. And so, therefore, most medications are actually okay. But that's if it's a medication. But if it's a, you know, an over-the-counter kind of thing that, you know, or a vitamin, then a person may or may not be able to use things that are kitnius. You'll see that if you look in the books, that some items are kitnius. So if a person has to be really sick to use an item that's kitnius, if he just has a headache, so then ideally they should use something that has no chametz and no kitnius. That would be the best thing. Okay, let's get to cosmetics. And so with Pesach, there's a problem of eating chametz, and there's also a problem of benefiting from chametz. Not only we're not allowed to eat chametz, we're not allowed to benefit from them, and cosmetics are things that we benefit from. And so therefore, we avoid eating or using chametz in a form that in some way could be eaten. Today, we don't really eat cosmetics, so we don't think of eating cosmetics. Years ago, when alcohol was outlawed during the Prohibition, people used to drink perfume. And sailors who would get drunk often, you'd say they're perfumed because you could smell the perfume on their breath. Most students would know that there's a way to distill the alcohol off a lot of the medications and things that we use. We have, you know, Baruch Hashem, if a person wants to get drunk or has alcohol, there are many other ways to do it. But there are a lot of medications and things that we have that we don't think of being alcohol or chametz, but really they are. For the most part, those are colognes and antiperspirants in the liquid form. Once they're in a gel form or a cream form, there's nothing. Well, nobody could eat that. Nobody could get drunk on that. Once it's cream or once it's in a solid form, there's nothing to worry about. So the only real category to make sure that it's chametz free would be things like colognes, perfumes, hairspray, and that's the third column over here by cosmetics and toiletries. The other area of concern are things that actually go into your mouth. Things like lipstick, toothpaste, mouthwash. Those also we want to be careful with. But either just the liquid things that may still be edible or those things that go into your mouth. Those are the two things we want to be careful with. Pet foods, up on the right column, very important. Our pets need to eat on Pesach. So our pets are not, they were not allowed to benefit from the five grains, so we shouldn't feed our pets any of the five grains, anything that has chametz in it. But our pets, they're allowed to eat kitnius. Maybe they're Svardim, I don't know, but it doesn't make it. Because you're allowed to benefit from kitnius. You're allowed to feed them sunflower seeds, other things, corn, wheat, any of the rice, those kind of items, you're allowed to feed them. Now, if a person knows that their animal will have a problem changing their diet, so they should speak to the rabbi. There are ways around that. One thing just mentioned that brewer's yeast is chametz. A lot of, I don't know why, but in a lot of the pet foods. Now, with pet food, you don't actually look for a hechsher. You just look at the ingredients. You see what's in it, and make sure it doesn't have any of the items that are listed. We have a much bigger pet food list if you'd like, but we didn't have room for it all over here on the alerts. Okay. Passover alerts, things to look out for. So I don't know what Rabbi Freundlich said about egg matzah, whether he recommended it or didn't recommend it. But before Pesach, there's a question of egg matzah. Egg matzah is not chametz, but the Ashkenazic custom is not to eat egg matzah on Pesach, because Pesach we eat the poor man's bread. And once you add an ingredient besides flour and water, it's no longer the poor man's bread. It's called matzah ashira. It's the wealthy matzah. And so therefore, we, even though it's not chametz, it could be it was baked right away, but our custom is not to eat egg matzah on Pesach. You have to be careful because egg matzah is available, and there's sometimes products in the store that are made from egg matzah. Different people, Sephardim eat egg matzah. Sometimes a person can't chew regular matzah, and there may be leniencies for them to eat, elderly people, sick people, to eat egg matzah. But it is something to be aware of that we avoid egg matzah. We have a store, most of the stores don't sell that many egg matzah products. There's a store in Sabra Market, and they have a lot of products from Israel. And Israel is mostly Sephardic, Jews of Sephardic origin, and a lot of the products there, some of them are kosher for Passover, and it says in Hebrew in very small print, only for Sephardim. And some of those products have rice and beans and kidneys, which if you're Sephardi, that's okay. And some of the products have egg matzah in them, or matzah that's made with, they have a lot of like crackers items and things there. So if you buy a lot of Israeli goods or you have access to them, you can't just look for kosher for Passover, you have to look the line after that and see if it's only for Sephardim or is it kosher for Passover for everyone. Yeah.
How come Sephardim eat kidneys? I mean, presumably they carry bins with the fiber as well.
It could be they didn't. It could be the markets were different and they didn't have like the general store that they did in Poland or Russia. So therefore the rabbis in those countries didn't see a need to make those decrees. I don't know whether maybe the rice was done differently. I don't know whether they had the beans. But for whatever reason, it never developed. The rabbis never had the same concerns, or they never forbid those items the way they did.
And furthermore, given that we've made, you know, certainly for medicines, we've made certain leniencies, is it just that we're no Ashkenazim just aren't willing to be lenient and have kidneys, even though in today's world, for sure, the rice is not mixed with five grains or...
The Sephardim tell me they find grains mixed into the rice, okay, and they check it.
All right, well, then rice is a bad example, but maybe soybeans or something like that. I mean, those are clearly kidneys, but they're not hummus.
Right. Well, we do find consistently... even in power products, that occasionally somebody finds a dairy item that got mixed in by mistake, and so it does happen that even items that are marked one way do have other things mixed in. Once the practice has become for many generations to avoid certain things, and it was accepted and adopted, so we don't really a practice that has been practiced by many generations and has been avoided. So we follow in the traditions of the practice becomes like law. That's right. In other words, the minute the custom becomes binding upon the people of those countries. Okay. Moving along, next page. Some other things to look out for. Now, for wine for Passover, we're supposed to use for the four cups, it's a mitzvah, and there's a mitzvah to do everything in the most beautiful way. And therefore, it's a mitzvah to buy nice things for the Seder and to have, things as beautiful as they can be. Now, as far as wine, we're instructed to use the nicest wines, the wines that we would enjoy the most for the Seder. In previous times, the wines that were pasteurized or were boiled were not as good as the unboiled wines. The reason why is that the unboiled wines, the unpasteurized wines, will, with age, they'll get better. You know, and the really, really fine wines, the older they are, the better they get. But if they pasteurize a wine, that kind of kills all the germs, and the older it gets, it won't change. So there is a preference in a lot of the books for the wines that we use on Passover to be non-pasteurized. The real expensive wines are never pasteurized. The Hebrew word is mevushal, or cooked. Many people like to buy wines for Passover that are not cooked because you can get real expensive wines that will age well, and that's appropriate. A person should try to get the best wines that are available to them. Today, by the way, they have what they call flash pasteurization, that they say you can even fool a Frenchman. The Frenchman can always tell a cooked wine from a non-cooked wine. The flash pasteurizers do such a good job that you won't taste that the wine was pasteurized. That's what they say. But be that as it may, it is a little bit more ideal to have uncooked wine the better wines and the better grape juices. Therefore, there is a grape juice that's also not cooked that's available on the market. Now, most of the grape juices are cooked because they won't last that long if they're not pasteurized. They'll get, so you know it's fresh if you're getting a uncooked. Now, the only problem is that many of us, and it's if we want to enjoy the Seder, we hire non-Jews and other kinds of people to help us clean up around the table and to serve, which is fully appropriate. In fact, if we're free, it's okay if we're available to get served. But the problem is that if we have these wines and these grape juices in our houses and we have non-Jews around, so then it would be better to only buy the mevushel kind of wine and grape juice. So a person should just know that both of those kinds of wines and grape juices exist. And it says it on a different place on every single bottle, whether it's mevushel or not. There's no rule. So you kind of have to turn the bottle around, look on the neck, look on the bottom. So again, if you have only, you know, Jewish people at the table and you're not worried about, you know, somebody, we have rules that if a non-Jewish person touches a non-cooked wine, that could potentially make that non-kosher. So therefore, you should just stick to wines that are pasteurized, that are cooked. But just be aware that even some of the grape juices are not necessarily cooked. One other problem this year is that you can sometimes find a wine from Israel that was grown during the sabbatical year and is fully kosher, but it has to be treated with the holiness of the sabbatical year. So just look at the label. If you're buying a really fine Israeli wine and it says it's grown during the sabbatical year, then you'll have to study the laws of how to be careful to treat the sabbatical wines. So that's just something to be aware of in the shopping for the wines. Probably the... Yeah.
Could you tell us the term in Hebrew, what to look for on the Israeli Bible for wine that will say that wine should be taken or something like that?
Well, it'll say something about Shemitah.
In Hebrew or in English?
Sometimes both, sometimes just in Hebrew. But it'll say it's from the Shemitah year. It'll say that on there, that it was the wine, because they're warning you that it's Shemitah wine, so the you have to be careful how you treat it. It may or may not. You can assume if it has a heksher, if it has a reliable heksher, that means everything was taken care of. But it could still be everything was taken care of, and we have to treat it as extra holy wine, because it was from Shemitah produce. Probably the most common mistake that's made is shopping. People take stuff off the regular aisle and they put it in the Pesach aisle. And the same companies that make Pesach products make non-Pesach products. And the same companies that make kosher Pesach matzahs make non-kosher Pesach matzahs. So it's a real good idea. We all make those mistakes that we think we're reaching for one item and we reach the next item to just double check the items that come home. That's probably the most common mistake that's made.
The Wasatsky tea. So it's a chamomile, and it was with the Pesach stuff, but it doesn't have a
tree
on it.
I got a call about that today. I have to investigate that a little more.
Yeah, you looked
at
some
years
they don't have the outside
ramp. Yeah, it's probably all right, but I haven't had a chance to find out yet. Okay, moving along. Getting to kashering the kitchen for Pesach. Okay. Okay.
The head of the national public
to
owned by
a Jew? No. There's no problem as far as buying after Pesach. Now, as far as kashering goes, so there's three kinds of ovens. There's self-cleaning, that's the easiest. If it's a self-cleaning oven, it's self-kashering. You just put on the self-cleaning cycle. Now, if it's a continuous clean or just a regular oven, so the hardest part of an oven is getting it clean. If it's clean, then it'll be easy to kasher. Getting it clean means that you have to make sure that there's no grease or something that'll come off through cleaning. Now, many ovens have stuff on them that are a different color, but it's from things that were baked on years ago, and the metal has just oxidized, and it's just not going to come out. So if it doesn't come out, it doesn't have to come out. Meaning that if you scrub it and scrub it and scrub it, and it's just not going to come out, that's fine. In other words, what we do is we try to clean it at least two times, you know, to scrub it with a chemical, and if nothing happens, then you don't have to worry about it. If it's coming out a little bit and it needs a little more elbow grease, then you really need to get it out. But if it's not coming out, then don't worry about it. So what you want to do is clean the oven. Ovens are a challenge just a little because it's dark inside there. So sometimes you can't see in the corners. And, you know, if you have a little flashlight or you look in the corners. But once the oven is clean, then it's easy from there. Basically, you turn the oven on high for 40 minutes and it's ready to go after that. Stovetop. Electric stovetop. Yes. What? You don't have to, but it's probably a good idea because of the ash and stuff there. You don't have to kosher the knobs of the oven. It's just a good idea to clean them. Everything in the kitchen should be cleaned. You know, 409, whatever, scored with soapy cleaners and stuff like that. Because you touch them with greasy hands and grimy hands. But they don't need any kind of koshering process. They don't have to have tape or sticky paper or anything. I mean, if somebody has the time or wants to, put foil on them. But they do need to be cleaned, wiped down. The handles on the ovens, the handles on the fridges, the handles on the drawers. Everything should have been cleaned, and that's sufficient. A stovetop. Well, the stovetop itself, if it's electric, you just have to turn it till it's on high, till it turns red. Once it's red, then the stovetop is kashered, if it's electric. If it doesn't turn red, you may need to have it fixed. There's sometimes electric ones that after a few years they don't work as well, and they don't get hot anymore, and that could be a problem. A gas stovetop, you just need to kasher the tripod. And usually you can put that in the oven when you kasher the oven. A flat top, which is the more common one, what do they call it, smooth top range. So it's actually easy to kasher the smooth top range. You just turn it on until it gets red. The problem is the area in between the smooth top range, the area in between. Now, on the old-fashioned electric ranges, you take your pot and you put it on the burner. And the area in between, pot never touches. And so most of the time, the area in between is not even kosher because you put on dairy pots and they splatter on the area in between, and then you cook supper and then the meat pots splatter on the area in between. But you would never put a hot pot or hot food directly on that area in between. The problem is on the flat top stove, it's very easy to move the pot over to the area in between. And not only that, occasionally you'll put a very thick, wide pot. Sometimes you'll put a very thick, wide pot on a very teeny burner, and all of a sudden, again, on the old-fashioned kind of electric burners, it's raised. So if you put a wide pot on a little burner, the rest of the pot is not touching the unconscious stove area. But if you have a flat top and you put a very wide pot on top of a teeny electric burner, then you're in trouble, because it's touching the area around. Now, the only area that was kosher for Passover is the area that got red. So the problem in the flat tops are just the area around the burners. So there are a few ways to deal with it. You could just cover those areas up. But the manufacturers tell you to try not to cover them because they could get scratched or they could get ruined. But that's the easiest way to do it. Just cover all around with like foil and cut out holes where the burners are. It's also a little sloppy to do it like that. You know, it gets the foil sometimes tear. But that's the easy solution. It's just cover with foil. You could go to Home Depot and they make like materials that won't burn, and just give them the dimensions to cut out where the burners are and just have a piece made. In Brooklyn they have it, you know, they have the materials already. You just go, they know automatically what you need. But that's also an easy way to go. And then there's a third way, which is to have a metal piece cut out and put on top of the burner, and this way your pots will always sit on top of the metal piece. And then it won't be sitting on the rest of the burner. So it's okay if you have those electric, or you can just be careful not to make sure to always put a wide pot and a wide burner. The good news is if it was cleaned very well before Pesach, and even if it did get put over, got pushed over a little bit, it probably won't make it non-kosher. It's just less than ideal. So that's today's challenge. Those flat tops are a little bit of a challenge to find the perfect solution. Yes?
With the gas top, you can put the pieces in with the self-cleaning oven.
Yeah.
But do you still have to cover everything in foil?
The simple answer is you don't. And sometimes it's a good idea to, if you want to like put something down on the middle, or you're afraid you want to put something down, or if something spills, but you don't have to, strictly speaking.
The cups underneath and all that air, you don't have to.
So the thing about underneath, you know, she's asking about a gas stove,
not a gas, right, a gas stove. The underneath, what do you call that? Whatever you call it, right?
Where the spills go.
Where the spills go. So, in theory, let's say, can you use the same old one you have year-round, or do you need to cover it? They make those inserts and things.
They do?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can buy, they make foil inserts. It's just a, it's relatively easy to
use. No, but in fact, it goes in the oven. I'm talking about the...
Yeah, for the gas stove, they make a round insert that's made out of foil that you can just buy and put under there. It's really easy to use.
Or a square.
Or a square. The issue is...
So that goes on the little round thing. But then there's a loom, there's metal all the way around, and that can, like, lift up, and then you have your...
Oh, those areas, right.
Comes in and all that.
Yeah. Well, if you don't need to clean it on Passover, then you don't need to clean in there. But if things spill and you'll have to clean it out, see, what you want to do is things that, if in the nature of cooking, you sometimes open that up and clean it out. You need to have all the funnels cleaned out in case something spills on Passover and you need to clean it out on Passover.
So if I don't clean, it's fine.
Yeah, in theory.
That works.
Oh, but I do just want to mention the reason why people like to replace underneath. I mean, this goes into if you don't have time and things are rushed, and so you're right. I wouldn't worry too much about under the, you know, in between and around, and as long as the burner is kosher. But sometimes you'll have a spill. And if you spill enough liquid and the liquid touches underneath and it touches the pot, in theory you could run into a question. And so one of the reasons why our mothers and grandmothers were so thorough was by cleaning it the way we do, if a mistake happens, we'll rarely have a problem. So it is a good idea to do it in the way in which everybody does it, but if a person is rushed and doesn't have the help and the time, then you know, you want to kosher your food surface, and you know, the underneath parts are less significant.
The hood.
It should just be cleaned well.
But it doesn't need to be covered.
If it's cleaned well, it's fine. It doesn't need to be covered. Right.
That's right.
If you have drippage, you know, if some of the models where the oven is, you know, steam goes up and then it drips down, I guess it depends on the clearance level, how close it is. But if you never have a, you know, situation where you find that the things steam and they drip down, I guess it depends on, you know, but if it's cleaned well, that's fine. Yes?
In some of these newer they don't recommend us taking this, the grid and putting it in the oven.
Right. Okay.
If you turn on the gas,
it'll kill the shine. Yeah, there are a few other ways to do it.
The shine, they're really, really heavy, and they don't recommend us putting them in the oven.
So there are a few other ways to do it.
If you turn on the burner really high, and they get really...
Right, so the area... Right. In theory, if the fire touches the burner for 15 minutes, the burner would be captured by the fire touching the burner.
Right.
The problem is that most of them have areas that extend beyond where the fire is, the tips of them. So if you're able to move them over so that the, you know, like do it in two or three stages, that would be fine. Or another way is to take like a bleh or a very wide pot and put it down so it forces the fire to cover the entire area. And so if you do that for 15, 20 minutes, that'll be fine. Now you can even do that with a very thick foil if you have the, you know, like you can cover the burner and turn on the flame and it'll keep the flame. That's another way to do it. And then again, you don't ruin the finish that way.
Okay.
Oh, you could use any pot, because you're just using the pot there really to keep the flame down. So you can even use a regular bluff or something as long as it's clean.
I did it last year. I did that. I put my grates, the recommended, not to put your grates in the oven. I put them in the oven. And they have little rubber.
And the rubber's melted up?
Yeah, the rubber burnt. The rubber melted in my oven.
Oh, boy.
So I understand what you're saying.
Or you have to get a new one.
You have to get a new one, pretty much. Then. Okay, moving along. So we're talking about the oven. We're talking about the stovetop. We didn't list dishwashers over here. Basically, if you have separate racks for Pesach and you have a stainless steel dishwasher, then you could kosher it. And if anybody wants instructions, I can tell them privately how to do it. It's not that...
In here it says about dishwashers, right?
They forgot to mention the racks.
Okay. Seriously?
Yeah. Well, they, if you look at it carefully, they do say you can't touch your plastic for PayPal.
Excuse me.
So, but they, I'm sure by next year's version they'll get it straight.
Well, that's really deceptive.
They made a mistake. What can I say? We all do. We try our best.
I have one question. You could cost you the hard plastic. Is that right?
Not for Passover. For year-round, we could. Okay. Moving along. Metal utensils, we basically can kosher metal utensils other than bake pans. We can't really kosher. In other words, when we kosher things like silverware, kiddush cups, pots perhaps, we don't kosher pans that are used for baking. Sheet pans, cupcake pans, those kind of things that are actually where the food cooks directly on them, those cannot be koshered for Passover, even though they're made of metal. Every year when they have the Passover kosher, somebody brings, you know, some sheet pans, bake pans, or even the glassware pan, pirate. You can't do that for Passover. It's too complicated to really kosher them for Pesach.
Can't just cover it a couple times?
Well, in theory you could, but foil always tears. That's the problem, though. And the food gets stuck underneath, and it's just not a... you know, if a person is like a one-time use, then you could, or, you know, if they're traveling. You can kosher metal sinks, and we do that by not using them with hot chametz for 24 hours, cleaning it well, and pouring boiling water in it. Those little things at the bottom of the sink should be replaced, or should have paste with all the little holes in it, the drains. One thing about koshering, now you can also kosher, you can kosher a sink or a natural stone countertop by pouring boiling water over it. Now somebody mentioned there are very many different kinds of countertops that are made today, and some of them are made mostly natural, but not fully natural. And there's a whole range of opinions depending on what kind of countertop you have, whether or not you can kosher it. And you also have to decide who you're going to ask the question to. So I have, like, I think if you, the Chicago one is more lenient on the countertops, but the Baltimore one is more strict, but the Chicago is more strict on other things. So just decide who you're going to ask, and then you could be consistent.
Where's Georgia?
I don't know. We're in the middle. I don't know. But certainly if you have natural stone, you can kosher it with boiling water. Now, just one trick, though, when you kosher with boiling water, there's a few tricks, but... first of all, what you want to do is the water needs to be straight from the stove. It needs to be straight from the fire when you kosher with it. So if, let's say, you're taking a pan of boiling water over to the sink or over to the countertop to pour it over the sink or countertop that you're koshering, so you really shouldn't put it down in between. In other words, you should take it straight from the fire and then pour. And also, if you, let's say, take a ladle or take a pitcher that you want to transfer the boiling water, so the problem is that then you're pouring the water not from something that was directly over the flame. So what you want to do, if you do take a ladle or a pitcher to take the boiling water, you leave it in the water for a few seconds for the ladle or the pitcher to heat up on the flame, and then you can take the water out and pour it with that pitcher on that area that you want to do. Now, there's one mistake that's sometimes made, and that is what you want, in order to kosher, the method of koshering is you pour boiling water onto the sink, or onto the surface. Now, sometimes what people do is they'll have a long countertop, let's say, like this, and they'll go, and the water will cascade down the whole sink, or the whole table, or the whole countertop, but the problem is, once the water hits the countertop and travels, it cools down. And so this area, even though it's being hit with water that was originally straight from the flame, is no longer being koshered with boiling water. So what you do is you pour a small amount of water and you walk along with the flame, or the, rather than pouring and like using, you know, the... I mean, a few inches are okay. You know, 2 or 3 inches are fine, but it, like I said, I see people, you know, just do it along the whole town or give it a big toss. And the water rolls. And you can put your hands on the water after it's traveled, you know, 8 to 10 inches. Another thing is, you want to kosher, should be very careful, first of all, have those gloves, and, you know, people have all kinds of injuries before paper. But you kosher away from yourself rather than towards, you try to be... Not to burn yourself, that's right. Okay.
Can I ask you one quick question about coffee makers?
Uh-huh.
I see in here it lists that you can... coffee makers that have brewed only unflavored caffeinated pure coffee. What about decaffeinated coffee? Unflavored decaffeinated coffee.
So that would need to be cashiered. One that went with decaf. We'll talk a little bit more about food, but decaf, one of the ingredients used in decaffeination is hummus. And so, therefore, decaf could be potentially hummus. Glasses, the custom is to kasher glasses by soaking them in water for 3 days, changing the water in between. This is only glasses that are drinking glasses. This wouldn't apply for Pyrex or for baking glasses, things that are used.
Glass bowls
like that would also be
okay.
Yeah, that would be fine. Okay, let's talk about products a little bit. So I'll give you the stuff that there's certain. This is the list that everybody wants. Now, unfortunately, it's not that long, and that's because most of the items we buy today are processed in some ways. There's very few things that are totally natural. If everything would be totally natural, then you could get much, much more. But almost everything we get by the time it gets to the supermarket is processed. It has preservatives. It has other things attached to it. And therefore, there are not a lot of items that we can buy and be sure that they're totally pure. Some items that you can buy that do not need a special Pesach hechsher. You can buy cocoa. Any pure cocoa is fine. You can buy sugar. Any pure cane sugar would be fine. Without dextrose. You can buy frozen fruit. As long as it doesn't have the ascorbic acid or citric acid or any other additives, if you want to buy just frozen fruit. Now, this confuses people because we don't recommend frozen vegetables. But frozen vegetables actually are processed on equipment that makes pasta. And so, therefore, we avoid frozen vegetables unless it has the hechsher. But frozen fruit is fine.
All frozen vegetables, except
the... They're all made on the equipment that has noodles and pasta. And it's relatively common to have pasta on the same equipment, cooked in the same equipment. So there are some frozen vegetable brands that have a P on it, but it's usually in a special place. Yes?
Good question about coffee. Taster's Choice, when you say regular, the gourmet roast is just a darker green, but it's not a flavor in any way.
That'd be fine. That'd be fine as well. Some other items that you can buy without a hechsher. All meats year-round, raw meats or fish, are acceptable for Passover as well. The standard cleanliness requires that they don't process cooked foods in the same place where they do raw meats. So any kosher butcher shop, if you bought, you know, the meat months ago, it should not be a problem. Now, cold cuts and hot dogs and barbecue chickens and things like that, those obviously have other ingredients. Those need to have a special kosher for Passover thing in them. A lot of people like to order from a company called Griller's Pride, which is a local AKC certified facility. They make a specialty South African product called Borvas, or I think Boris. And it's a wonderful product, but it has some ingredients that are not kosher for Passover. Now, they use the same mixer for the ground meat as they do for the Borvas, because the Borvas, that's one of their secret ingredients that go to the Borvas, it's some of the same ground meat. Now, it does get washed in between, but it doesn't have a Passover washing. Meaning that nobody inspects it to make sure there's no drop of ground meat that had the spices and the borovas mixed in. So, for the ground meat from Griller's Pride, we about a month before Pesach, we clean it out and they stop making any borovas, and we only recommend using the ground meat from Griller's Pride that was processed after that time. If you use the other one, it's still okay because it is cleaned. It's just not Passover cleaned. So basically, you can't go too wrong without ground meat. But that's just, like I said, because we're aware of that situation. And typically, you know, if we want to use ground meat on Passover, we want to be sure there's nothing mixed in. So try not to use, if you have Griller's Pride ground meat older than a month old, try not to use it and try to use the special Passover one. But any other meats you have in the freezer or chickens, there's no problem in using the raw meats or chickens, yeah.
Like last year, the year before, there was a big problem with getting like the salads and the raw lettuce, the high infestation. Is this going to be problematic also with it?
That's a good question. In truth, it varies from year to year depending on, lettuce infestation. So there's a mitzvah to eat Marer, which is the Seder, and one of the ideal forms of Marer is romaine lettuce. And romaine lettuce, many years, the buggiest time of the year is Passover season, the spring. And we actually check romaine lettuce every single day. We have a mashgiach that goes to Fresh Express in Morrow, Georgia, and we check batches and batches of Fresh Express. And right now, it's still not bad. But there'll be a certain week in the spring where every single day it's full of bugs. And sometimes that corresponds with Passover, sometimes it doesn't. But be that as it may, romaine is always somewhat buggy. And so it does need to be checked very thoroughly and very carefully for insects.
Anyone bring in the botic toxin because one of the
to Yeah, they don't seem to be able to get it here, or it's not. I haven't seen it here. In fact, we check, we do romaine for Fresh Express in Georgia, right near the airport, and it's not sold here. It's sold in the East Coast. we're just hired to check it. We don't know. The company ships it up to New York and Baltimore, and it's all comes from. But I will say this. Now, they do put some preservatives in the water, in the salad washes. So, ideally, what many of them do is they change the preservative before Passover, and there'll be a P on the Fresh Express or on the Public Salads and on the some of the other brands. Ideally, there should be a P on, but even if it doesn't have the P, our policy is you can still use it. So you can buy bagged lettuces for Pesach. You can buy the bagged romaine, even if it doesn't have a pea. The romaine doesn't have any certification because of the insect. Now, it is. If you like to buy bagged lettuce, you can just buy the bagged romaine and just check it yourself. And you don't even need to wash it. It's already been washed. Just make sure you check it very thoroughly. And there are different ways people have of, some have light boxes, or some people like to go outside, and on a very sunny day where there's a really bright light, and check. Some people like to just use the center of the leaf, the heart of it. Those are a little cleaner than the outer leaves where they have all the folds. And they're just different methods that people have for. But our carrots also are washed with that preservative, and baby carrots. Some people prefer not to use baby carrots without a OUP. Our policy is you are allowed to use it. Some people recommend peeling all the vegetables that have waxes and things. Our policy is that's not required. Again, if you want to, great, go ahead. If that's your custom, wonderful. But as far as strict requirement, we don't say you have to peel the vegetables and the. Some people even peel tomatoes, I think. They put them in the microwave and they peel away.
What about
orange zest
and lemon zest? Can you use that?
Yeah. Our policy is that you are allowed to. Yeah.
So you can't, it has to have an OUP on it to use the Fresh Express. It doesn't have to have a hexer. Is that what you're saying?
So I'm saying that it doesn't have to have a Passover hexer as far as the preservatives that they put in the water to wash. Now, as far as checking, if it doesn't have a hexer, you'll have to check it yourself. But you can still buy it. And it still could be easier for you to buy Fresh Express that's been washed once or twice, and in the whole bag you'll find one or two bugs, than if you go to the farmer's market and you're going to buy stuff where it's going to be teeming with bugs. It could be that you just prefer to buy the bags and just check it yourself. Many people say Iceberg is fine. You can use Iceberg. Again, there are different customs. If your family's custom is not to use it, but Iceberg is acceptable for the Mora. There are many great... Rabbi Aaron Cutler used to use Iceberg lettuce for blank ones. Yes?
Okay, so I had checked into certain products having to do with special diets. And here it's listed nuts, raw, whole, chopped, or ground almonds are okay. Mm-hmm. Now, I happen to know that Trader Joe's and Bob's Red Mill both have ground almonds, mm-hmm. but they grind their almonds on the same equipment as beans, and to make bean flour and things like that. So here it's saying that you can use the ground almonds, mm-hmm. and I know for sure because people with allergies and whatnot have to know exactly even what the equipment's used. Mm-hmm. But I know that it's a known
right, so
that they
would they typically clean out, as long as it was a cold process and it was cleaned out thoroughly, then it would still be okay, even though people might be.
Process, and also they dump like the first. Certain amount. So would that still be okay to use the ground
on it? It should be, yeah. Mm-hmm. It'd be fine.
Becca, kitchen, do you recommend covering the shelves in the refrigerator, or to just put stuff in if it's clean?
So the shelves in the refrigerator, it really depends. If you put hot pots in the fridge, which they say is not such a good idea, but sometimes you have to, so then it's a good idea to cover, you know, to have a covering down where you're going to put the hot, because chances are you put hot hummus pots down, and now you want to put, so on those one or two shelves where you're likely to put a hot pot, that would be a good idea. But, what? Yeah, that'd be fine. Yeah, that's fine too. Yeah, but it cold, if it's washed, that's fine. There's no need to. Some other items, tea bags don't need a Pesach Hashgacha, caffeinated. Regular decaf always needs. Decaf coffee, decaf tea. Now, decaf coffee bags do need a Pesach Hashgacha because it's a mixture of instant. Instant coffee does need a Pesach Hashgacha. But again, so tea bags. Any caffeinated regular tea bags, unflavored, you can buy. Decaf tea bags, you have to buy only a certain brand, kosher brand. Coffee, now, any regular pure or ground coffee that is fine for Pesach. Decaf, you can only buy a special Passover brand. And instant, you can only buy a special Passover brand. It has to do with the way they make the coffee. When they make instant, they add an ingredient that sometimes would not be kosher for Passover. Actually, if it's instant freeze-dried, it's okay. Because the way they freeze-dry, they don't add that ingredient, but if they spray-dry it, they do. It's too confusing, just buy Senko or OUP and don't worry about it. But everybody likes to know, you know, some things they can buy without a special. Extra virgin olive oil is fine. We also, napkins, paper towels, we avoid the ones that have the glue on it, you know, try not to use the pieces that have the glue on it. Interesting thing that OU came out with this year, they said that their rabbis said that it's not necessary to use a Passover hashgacha on liquid dish detergent.
No.
Yes. So we always tell people that they should, but we feel that if OU says it's okay, we're not going to argue with that. So we therefore, any dish detergent would be fine. That's what the OU wrote it here in the book. Basically, the question was whether or not they use alcohol, dish detergents use alcohol. And so are they using a possible grain detergent? So either they know, because they're the OU, that none of them use alcohol anymore, the kind that's grain alcohol. Now, it's probably, I have a theory that it has to do with this, the ethanol, because they're using now the ethanol for fuel, it's too expensive to use in dish detergent. But it could be that, I don't know why, but anyways, OU says you can use any dish detergent this year, and that's in the OU book as well, and so we're not going to argue on the OU as far as that. Spices. So spices, any ground spice should have a Passover hechsher, because when they grind it, it goes through a machine that doesn't get cleaned out thoroughly in between. But we've been to spice factories, if you take a flashlight and shine it on the machine, you always see dust left over from the last run that they did. They don't like to wash it out in between, because if you use water, it makes bacteria and things grow. And so they just blow out the old spice and they put in the new, and many of the spices have breadcrumbs in them. So any kind of ground spice should have an OUP on it. Any kind of whole spice does not need a Passover hechsher. So any kind of spices that are, you know, like pieces or big, you know, those do not need a special Passover hechsher. You can buy anyone on the market as far as that. Let me just think of one other thing, and then we'll take all kinds of questions, okay? There's a few items that we say, like hemp, flaxseed, and quinoa. So our position is they don't need a special Passover supervision. That I'm not sure about. I'd have to look into that. They don't need a special Passover supervision, and you can even buy them from the bins, from the big, you know, health food stores, and that's fine. But the general rule is that anything that's bought, especially from an open kind of thing, could have something else mixed in, or could be they didn't clean out the bin so well. So it should be looked through to see that the integrity of the quinoa or the integrity of the same concept that the Sephardim do, where they look through the rice very carefully to see if there's something in there that looks funny, they pull it out. So if you're buying quinoa or flaxseed or hemp, just casually look through it to make sure it's just quinoa, it's just flaxseed. It's just hemp, and then that will be fine. We don't require you to buy a special, you know, package with a hexure or this and that. As long as you've looked at it and you're convinced that it wasn't compromised in the integrity of the item, that should be fine. Salt, as long as it's non-iodized. And then there's a lot of other little things that are listed here. There's a lot of great information on the website. We also are happy to answer questions or emails. We do our best, although it's a busy season during the week as well. But nobody should feel like, oh, I'm bugging Rabbi Stein, it's not a problem, or whoever else is going to answer the phone. Let's take some questions. Yeah.
Two questions. First,